Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, big tech's big moment. Meta kicking off earnings for the heavily owned group today. We're going to ask the committee whether they'll live up to the hype and help stabilize stocks overall. Joining me for the hour, Brent Talkington, Joe Terranova, Steve Weiss. We take you to the markets first. Check how things are going. We're giving a little bit back today across the board. So we are red. I want to set the stage for the start of the most important earnings reports, obviously mega cap tech. And I don't want to go deep yet on Meta. I want to look overall because expectations are high. They have to be. I want to read you where earnings expectations are for mega cap tech coming in. This is unbelievable, okay? You want to know how important these are? Mag 7 earnings on aggregate are expected to rise 40% in Q1. Revenue is expected up 13% versus 2.3% for the rest of the S&P. The rest of the S&P is expected to see a 3.1% decline in earnings.
Okay. Sounds like last quarter, because that's exactly what happened last quarter. And let me tell you why. It's so critical that these mega cap companies deliver, and this relates to the market itself. On Monday, I said I felt as though the market was bottoming. And one of the reasons why I said the market was bottoming is because I didn't think there would be follow-through selling because you had strength in financials, you had strength in healthcare, and you had strength in industrials. The market holds its 100-day moving average at 49.50. We now rally up to the 50-day moving average at 51.20. Here's the handoff. It's got to come from mega cap earnings to get through that 50-day moving average to restore price above the 50-day moving average. Financials, industrials, healthcare, they did their work. Now it's incumbent upon the mega caps.
The bar, though, Bryn, is so high, isn't it? If you look at the year-over-year EPS growth expectations for mega caps, just to try and continue to layer for our viewers just where expectations have gone from a pure earnings and sales standpoint, but EPS growth expectations, NVIDIA 400%, Amazon 169, tonight's Meta nearly 100% year-over-year earnings growth expectations for Q1.
Yeah, I mean, I think that on the other side of that, look at Apple. They're going to have declining revenue, declining earning on that chart you just showed. And I think you're going to continue not only to see a dispersion with the mega caps of Amazon, Meta, Facebook, Microsoft, and NVIDIA crushing it. I think Meta tonight is just setting up, and we'll talk about it later, but this is going to deliver the goods. I think Microsoft and Amazon will also deliver the goods. And so I think you're setting up where these multiples and the growth we had last year in the stock appreciation is going to be warranted and will help lift up the rest of the market. And to your point about, you know, these six names versus the other 494, I think once we get into the second and third quarter of the year, the other names in the S&P from a revenue and earnings are going to start to pick up. I think this is just a Q1 year over year. I'm about the negative earnings growth.
Weiss, we're going to meet the moment because if you look at the mega cap tech performance from the October bottom, we're not here without that, obviously. NVIDIA is up 100% in 6 months. Meta's up 66% in 6 months. Amazon, Alphabet, 39%, 29.5% respectively. Microsoft, 24%. We can take Apple out of this conversation for now.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't report this week anyway, so it's reasonably irrelevant to our conversation. But the question is, are they going to live up to the hype, so to speak?
I believe they will, actually. I think that that Meta and Microsoft, I don't want to say definitely, but much higher probability on Meta. Microsoft, you always have the enterprise spend and whether there's a weight and also the spend, the CapEx spend, which they can well absorb in AI, et cetera. But I think they should. Of course, a lot of that will be based on cloud And we've seen a recent acceleration of cloud growth, and that's critically important to Microsoft. And then we get to Google and Amazon. We won't talk about those now, but without a doubt, they're, you know, critically important to the market because they've been the backbone of the market. We used to have those conversations, can the market move up without Apple? And my view is always yes. Can the market move up without these mega cap companies, the group of them? I'd say no, because there's such a large percentage of the S&P. So math pure alone.
Maybe it's better that Meta's the first one of the group in terms of,
without a doubt.
If you're bullish and you know you're expecting big things from the big caps, that this thing hasn't really disappointed any time lately. And the expectation is ever since they got fit, like Gerstner told them to do, this stock's been an absolute juggernaut.
Right, but here's what I'd say. If you take a look at, there's not a lot of confidence in the mark now. Dave's got a few more hours to trade, but you take a look at Meta today, I mean, the stock peaked at 508. The reversal now to where it is, so it's trading now at 487. That intraday volatility, and we're talking about percentage points that obviously are small relative to the gains and relative to the share price, but nonetheless, it shows that not everybody's so sanguine about the report today that's going to come out.
Well, there's,
and I think that's good.
Okay, I can go with that. I mean, if you look at where these stocks are off of their most recent highs, it's not like they're ramping into the numbers.
No,
which would be a little bit of a different story.
Right.
So, you know, Meta's down 7.5% since April 8th. You know, not that long ago, okay? The stocks come in a bit. So that takes a little bit of the pressure off. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, as I said that, and, you know, just to finish that thought, it's really dictated, I think, by quants, number one, because you can see the correlation, which is virtually one-to-one, between rates, yields on the 10-year, and how the stock trades. So, and that's tech overall, that's the market overall. So I'd say that it's sort of, there's no noise here, right, in terms of the company. I haven't heard any analysts say they're going to miss, you know, predicted. I haven't heard any analysts do anything over the last month but raise their price target without any fundamental reason to do so.
No, but one of the key things is, can you maintain the level of growth that the company has now reset to, particularly from a sales standpoint? Julia Boorstin certainly watching that as she waits for this report, like the rest of us in overtime. And that is the big question, right? Continuing this revenue growth.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Scott. After Meta blew past expectations last quarter, it is expected to continue to accelerate its revenue growth now to 26% in the quarter, and that's anticipated to be a 96% growth in earnings per share. Now, Meta is expected to benefit from tailwinds from Reels, from the advantage of its AI tools driving results for advertisers, as well as a solid digital ad market, as well as some early revenue coming from messaging. But Meta shares are up about 132% in the past 12 months. They're up about 40% year to date. So analysts are starting to note that expectations are very high. JP Morgan writing, quote, first quarter ad checks were solid and Meta is emerging as an AI leader among ad names, but comps are getting tougher through 2024. Now, AI will certainly be top of mind on today's earnings call after Meta's AI assistant rolled out just last week. And we will also be listening to see if there's any commentary or any answers to questions on the impact of a potential TikTok ban that might drive up Meta's user engagement. Scott?
All right, Julia, I appreciate that. We'll obviously see you in overtime waiting for this. Joe, you own it.
I do.
Clearly, worst year ever in 22, best year ever in 23. Let's see what happens now in 24.
Let's see what happens this evening. And as I said with my initial remarks, this could be the near-term catalyst for the market. I agree with you. I like that Meta bats leadoff here. That's a good thing. But it could be a scenario similar to Netflix, where the expectations are exceedingly high. There's some sort of surprise contained within the earnings or delivered in the earnings conference thereafter, and the stock doesn't respond accordingly to really strong earnings. And what does that mean to the market? That means we delay advancing further when we kind of sit in a little bit of this consolidation area. Does it change what Meta is? No, absolutely not. Last quarter, they delivered a $50 billion buyback. They introduced a dividend. This is a company that is gaining market share on social media. X is in decline. Snap, clearly from a valuation standpoint and certainly from a revenue standpoint, is not an alternative in social media to Meta. So with Reels, with Instagram, with WhatsApp, they're gaining market share. They're in a prime position. They focused on cost efficiency. The business is going to be good for the duration of 24. Could they stumble tonight? Yes. And if they do, the market stumbles with it.
Who Weiss has more pressure on it this week outside of, let's just take Meta out of it, because you're going to get Alphabet and Microsoft tomorrow. Who's got more pressure on it? I know what's happened of late in terms of the narrative around Alphabet, stumble after stumble related to AI rollouts, whatever. The stock, though, has done well.
It has.
It's outpaced Microsoft over the last 12 months, despite all of that noise in the marketplace.
Yeah, and actually, it was a great buying opportunity to take advantage of when we had all the noise about the launch of AI. I'd say, look, it's still clearly on Alphabet is where the pressure is, because that's where I think the daggers are lining up, because those that said, hey, I'm going to sell it because they botched the rollout, they're not going to be competitive in AI, they've got to prove them wrong. So I think it's clearly them. Microsoft is not without pressure, though, because they're viewed with OpenAI partnership as the leader in AI. I view them as a leader in AI. So they've got to show at least a nice uptake there. But if you do come back to Meta, Meta's got the easiest view, and nothing's easy, but the easiest road to AI impacting their business, because it's instantaneous. Unlike Microsoft, who has to go through the enterprise buying cycle, right? There is no enterprise buying cycle with consumers. There is on the ad side, but it's the easiest pathway to showing the impact of AI, and they are an innovator taking advantage of it.
Bryn, you own Microsoft also, right? And Jefferies today says the bar has been lowered. They point to the fact that shares are flat since the last print, and the multiple is also compressed by some 6%, therefore the bar is lowered. You buy that?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. I think that they're expected to have, 16% revenue growth, 15% earnings growth. I think Satya and Amy Hood are the best, combo of a CEO, CFO. Also think about this. They are a lead investor on Rubrik. They were a lead investor on OpenAI. This is a huge company that's investing in some of the most exciting startups out there. We know we're going to hear about Copilot, whether it's the Copilot app on your phone or whether it's Copilot within the enterprise of Outlook. I think that over the next few years, as an owner of a company, everyone's going to have that Copilot on their employees' desktops because it just creates so much efficiency. And so I think between Satya and Amy, the exciting about Azure and the Copilot, I think it's going to be another solid read, and Microsoft continues to be a top name to own by investors.
Here's a good one for you. I'm going to ask everybody the same question, too. You guys buyers on dips if these companies, the stocks go down this week? Because that's a central question right now to, whether there's going to be enough support around the names that have pulled back, of late in the last week or so, as the stocks have come in, dip buyers are going to save the day. They've done it the last couple of days. They've certainly picked up a number of these names, NVIDIA included. All right. Let's just say, Meta goes down. Mm-hmm. Are you buying that dip?
Meta goes down, would buy the dip. Alphabet goes down, would buy the dip. Microsoft goes down, would buy the dip.
What about you, Weiss?
First of all, they're all my biggest positions, those three.
Yeah.
If they went down substantially, I'd upsize for a trade. But since I'm full in those positions, not looking to add exposure, I mean, they're pretty significant. If I didn't have a full position, I absolutely would buy the dip, particularly on Meta and Google, because I believe that they're cheap relative to the market, relative to their growth rate. I'd say Microsoft's fairly valued at this level. But nonetheless,
well, it's fairly valuable. I mean, the multiples come in.
It has. But I love them all as a point, right? And if I weren't full, I'd buy the dip.
Statistically, Microsoft really matters. Let's not pretend it doesn't. It's a $3 trillion company. Mm-hmm. It's the largest company in the S&P 500. No, I don't. I know you didn't say that. It's the largest company in the S&P 500.
Yeah.
And if the second largest Apple is going to stumble like we think, well, we better get something good from Microsoft.
Yeah, no, I think people would agree with that. Bryn, I get you the same question, this idea of buying the dip. If you have an opportunity to add to these positions on pullbacks, would you do it?
Yeah, well, I mean, like Steve, I own a ton of tech, right? Like tech and energy definitely are my two biggest holdings. So yes, theoretically, I would buy the dip. I think it's a very, very, very unlikely. Microsoft even has a dip. Google, on the other hand, I don't own it, but I wouldn't buy it. I think with Google, I still don't like the leadership scenario. Who runs this company? Is it Sundar or is it Sergey and Larry? When these other companies, it's very, very clear who the visionary is, who the leader is, how they're executing. I still think with Google, that top level structure is very unappealing to me because I think that leads to an inability to make really important decisions. And I think one of the most important times within these technology companies.
But the stock performance would suggest otherwise, though, right? As we said, this goes towards the narrative not necessarily matching up with the fundamental performance of a stock, right? I mean, year to date, Alphabet's up 13%. Over the last year, it's up 50. So where's the real problem, I guess, is what I'm getting at. That's a broader question to everybody, not you, but those who want to criticize Alphabet, even like the Gerstners of the world, right? He criticized it, he sold it, and then he saw the stock pull back, and then he bought it.
Yeah, sure. And obviously, when the information changes, we have the right to change our mind. When I'm underwriting an individual company, if I'm not going to buy one of my ETFs and I'm going to go into and buy an individual company, it comes down to the leadership, right? And so that's why I don't own Google, is like, I don't know who runs this company. And so I can tell you Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Tim Cook, Satya and Amy, I can tell you exactly who's running it and what they're doing. You can't say that with Google. And so for me, with my strategy, that eliminates it from my portfolio.
So let's talk Tesla, Brynn. I'll start with you. We've made it our chart of the day, obviously, on the back of earnings. It is higher. It's not like the earnings report was great. It was far from it. But this idea of what Musk talked about the production of affordable new EVs by early 25 is what has jump-started this stock today. So you'll take the leader of this company at his word, I suspect. The market seems to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you and I talked about this on Closing Bell yesterday, and I said the sentiment and the bearishness on this stock, right, not the company, on the stock, was just so loud it was deafening. And I said if I were short the stock, which clearly I'm long, I would not be short this name going into the earnings print. And if they even do less worse, I think the stock was going to pop. And that's exactly what happened. And if I thought it was a very good earnings call. Elon was like the adult in the room. To me, it was like quintessential Elon. He had like good analogies about elevators and horses and flip phones. And to me, what I wanted to hear is, I don't want to hear about robotaxi. He talks about the cyber cab, but they're able to build the cheaper car on the same manufacturing line. And I'm going to say use the same chassis. I don't even know if EVs have a chassis. This is my word. Use the same theoretical chassis for the $20,000 model as they would do for these cyber cabs. And you got an inference that that was going to be the case. And so I think you want to have the short-term case in line of the growth within the current business, along with the future excitement around the innovation. And so I think that's what made the stock pop. And now we're going to start finding a floor in this name. And we'll see if other investors start to come into the name as the stock itself, which was broken, will now find a floor. And then I think move higher with this refocus on building out cars that are affordable for everybody.
You guys, I mean, you were worried about, you know, the shift in strategy, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. Suggestions and maybe even some from the company itself that it was a robo-taxi type future rather than a lower priced vehicle as they've been continuously cutting prices and losing some market share in markets like China. So you'll take Musk at his word. It's not so much, I mean, because some would suggest, well, given the history, it's like, okay, maybe we should pay attention to what they do, not what they say, because we've been burned before. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, so I think you're 100% right. And that's where my irritation would have been on this robotaxi, now call it a cyber cab. But when they're saying that on the same chassis, on the same manufacturing line that they already have, they're going to be able to build these cheaper cars. That makes sense, right? I mean, one of the things that is like under talked about is the manufacturing marvel that they are able to pull off at Tesla as a company. And if they can take the design of the cyber cab, but put it in actually a $25,000 car, and listen, don't forget, the other big automakers are pulling back on EVs. And so if we're gonna end up having more EVs longer term, Tesla will continue to be in pole position. I do think with China, once again, you have to have an expanding user base, because I know their market share will shrink, but you need to have just more Chinese buyers in general buying EVs. And I think Tesla will get their fair share outside of BYD and some of the other names.
I mean, Weiss or Bryn sort of hit it on the head. I mean, the stock was poised for a bounce, right? It's been getting killed.
Yeah. No, she had a brilliant call going into the quarter. Expectations could not have been lower, as evidenced by what the shares have done over the last, since the beginning of the year. I did cover half the position going into the quarter. Don't ask me why I didn't cover the other half. The setup was as good a one as you could possibly want. It's also possible that if I weren't short, I would have bought it, because the odds are the stock would have lifted. But to me, the fundamental story really hasn't changed. It's as if Elon sat in a room with the CFO and said, what can we say that's going to hit everybody's hot button, put their fears aside, and have those announcements not really take place, the productivity of those announcements, for a few quarters or a few years or a decade, and let them hang on to the dream. So you've gone from Fax, which is a company that had negative free cash flow this quarter. They're seeing their market share erode in China. China, continues to be, and Bryn highlights this, in fairness to her. Last night I saw her comments, great comments, great spot. China remains a risk at 20%, where the government doesn't want foreign players, no matter what the historical relationship.
I mean, look, we let's be fair. We've seen this movie before. It's going to be up to investors at this point to decide what they want to do, what they want to believe, what they're willing to wait for, where they think the focus is, et cetera, et cetera.
So I think there's a danger in relying on his credibility. It was just a few weeks ago that he thought robo-taxis or the cyber cab now were going to drive it. And he tweeted out August 8th, whatever date was, robo-taxis. Number one, Waymo's been in robo-taxis for a decade, and they're finding it very difficult. The states are not willing yet. So that's years away, and we don't even know if it'll be a profitable
business. Sure, but I mean, he has had an incredible ability to prove the naysayers,
without a doubt,
the short seller. I mean, in some respects, everybody wrong. Because this stock over a longer period of time has obviously done.
Look, the guy's one of the top entrepreneurs of all time, right? All time. I don't have to restate my bear case on it. The facts are I've got a very small position. I covered more after the opening, and I'll figure out what to do with the rest. It's unlikely I'll stay there because at this point it's a nuisance. And I think that, the tide's turned from a sentiment standpoint.
Yeah.
You won't see numbers come out again for a while.
Okay, so let's give the last word to you. Because now I feel like you're in a really interesting position here, okay?
Yeah.
The rebalance is coming up. I'm not going to press you to say anything that you can't for compliance reasons, but a stock that before yesterday looked broken, to say the least, and had theoretically lost all of its momentum, gets a 10% lift today, and maybe in the process of jumpstarting that momentum again. That remains to be seen. You're going to have to make a decision on the rebalance before you have the thesis played out that, okay, maybe momentum's back. So take me through the thought process on what you're able to say and what you're comfortable talking about.
Okay, so the stock right now is 27% below its 200-day moving average. So the momentum is still clearly negative on the stock.
For sure. One day doesn't a massive reversal make.
Well,
let's make that point.
It's down 42% year to date, so that's a lot of price damage.
Okay.
I like what Bryn has outlined, and I think Bryn would agree with the following statement. I don't think Bryn's looking for a big move in the stock in the near term. I think Bryn is looking over the course of time for this stock to recover. And candidly, if you were to ask me personally how I feel after last night's earnings, just in terms of what's my disposition towards Tesla, I would say I'm extremely neutral. I think that someone who's short is going to be disappointed because they did enough to buffer the downside potential. And I think someone who's long, okay, they lifted the stock, there's still a lot of technical damage, and the free cash flow was remarkably negative. And that's a big story there. So I think in the near term, I would characterize this as extremely neutral. What will occur on Tuesday, we'll see what the rules do.
That's fair. You've been able to make money being short this stock.
Without question.
You just can't overstay your welcome.
Great point.
People who have overstayed their welcome have been run over and then backed up over.
Yeah, shorts are always a trade anyway. You just can't have ego about it. And that ego led me to keep half the position into earnings. Shouldn't have.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Weiss has bought more of a big name within the NASDAQ universe, and we're going to get to that coming up. We've got the earnings set up. We've got stocks on the move. We got a lot to get to. We'll do it next.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Visit odfl.com to learn more.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Want to highlight that committee move I told you about into the break as we come out. Speaking of buying dips, Netflix, Weiss, bought more.
Yeah, and as I said last week, really was my intention. I want to see it settle because the market's not really buying dips at this point. But I wanted to participate in the recovery of the market. It was a small position. It's still a small position. Didn't buy a lot. It was looking like a star for about 5 minutes there or 2 days.
I mean, it's not like a massive, massive position.
No, it's not.
5% of the company. You need to file it.
Close, but no. But look, I also want to think about what not talking about sub growth. Subs will be for each quarter, and I actually like it because I think that obscured the story. That's all the stock would trade on. What was sub growth? So they can blow out the quarter. And if you recall back to when Apple stopped reporting some metrics on iPhones. It did nothing to it. As a matter of fact, it helped them in bad quarters. So I think it's still the winner. I still think it's great stock. Growth this year versus last, in terms of revenue, in terms of earnings, is going to be pretty strong. These analysts did the stock no favor by, again, like Meta, jumping over themselves to increase the price target without any fundamental reason to do so. I hope we don't see a replay in the Meta report. I don't think we will. But, yeah, and I'll add to it again.
You love Vertiv for good reason. Stock hit an all-time intraday high today.
Yeah.
As they beat, they raised their guide. You've been talking about this stock for a while. You own it, obviously.
Yeah, the stock's doubled since I bought it in November. And as I've said the last few times, I haven't been adding to it because at this level is expensive. But, now they've set the bar higher. Scarcity value, they are, to me, the safest way to play AI growth because they're the tool belt for the data centers, and data center growth is just monstrous. So, yeah, I like it too. Great story. Management's great, by the way.
Joe, you have some decisions obviously to make as well on Texan, which is down and was down earlier about 11%. We can see what the stock's doing on an intraday basis. I thought it was down, or maybe it's not.
So Texas Instruments was added to the ETF at the end of January. End of January at $160. So basically, coming into the earnings report, the momentum was flat. And if you look at the stock, even after today, you're looking at a year-on-year advance of zero. So the stock is basically flat. I think there's a nice read-through here, though. Mm-hmm. I think there's a nice read-through for the semiconductor industry. And pull up Analog Devices, ADI, and you'll see the strong performance there. It looks like the industrial equipment makers have finished working down their inventories. And Texas Instruments, it's a bellwether because it's really the most diversified of the large semiconductors with their customer base and the products that they're delivering on. And there was finally a degree of confidence. Mm-hmm. It was confidence that was injected into this earnings call. So I think it's more of a larger setup for semis overall that you might have some confidence that we're going to hear good things.
I think I meant Teledyne, right? That's the one that's down a lot.
So
you have that too?
Teledyne, unfortunately, it is in the JOTE ETF. It's having an absolutely awful day today. Not only did they miss, but they cut, and that's something that is unique. We haven't heard much of that during this earnings season.
All right, so Weiss is going to get his phone, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got Greenlight's new letter. David Einhorn just releasing his quarterly letter to shareholders. Got our hands on it. We'll bring you the details next.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to the Halftime Report. I'm Kate Rogers with your news update. As President Biden signs a bill that could see TikTok banned in the U.S., his re-election campaign plans to keep using the platform. A campaign official told NBC News that it was using TikTok to engage with voters. The new law gives TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, 9 months to sell the app or face a ban in the U.S., making January the earliest of when a ban could start. 131 million people in the U.S., almost 40% of the population, are living in areas with unhealthy air pollution levels. That's according to the American Lung Association. The organization's report found that Americans had more, quote, very unhealthy or, quote, hazardous air quality days than at any other point in the survey's history, and cited the effects of climate change, such as increasing wildfires, for the findings. And Democratic Congressman Donald Payne Jr. has died. The New Jersey Democrat was hospitalized earlier this month after he suffered a heart attack. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy said in a statement that Payne embodied the very best of public service. Congressman Payne was 65 years old. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Kate, appreciate it. Kate Rogers. We do have a news alert. Greenlight Capital just releasing its quarterly shareholder letter. Leslie Picker has it and is with us at Post 9. So what is David Einhorn writing to his investors?
In my hand, a lot of new picks this quarter, actually, and some comments on the markets as well. So we'll get to those first. He kind of reiterated the sentiment he shared with you in an interview recently where he says the stock market is fundamentally broken. He talks about there are so many investors out there that don't care about valuation, namely passive index funds, can't figure out valuation. He says most retail investors who have no formal valuation training, and those who choose not to care about valuation, he's referring here to various technical strategies, quant strategies, and any trading strategy with short-term holding periods. And he says the result is a very small proportion of trading volume today is based on strategies that try to identify which stocks are undervalued in order to buy them for an intermediate or a long-term investment period. However, he says that from their perspective, this is essentially an opportunity because it allows them to invest in areas that they see opportunity that are what he calls ridiculously cheap. So as for the picks, this is a very interesting trade. They said they had a strong quarter in macro, which added 3.1% net of fees and expenses. And largely it's based on this. He says early in the quarter, they established this new large position by selling December 2024 SOFR futures. That's because he said that at the time, the market expected the Fed to cut short-term rates between 1.5% and 1.75% this year. However, as we now know, that has shifted, and it shifted in a way that benefited his trade. He still believes this was unlikely and expressed their view directly by selling SOFR futures. However, they've trimmed the position to take some profits in the meantime. Gold also a significant contributor, he said. SOLB, that's an essential chemicals business. And they established a medium-sized position in Penn Gaming with a play there. They also established a position in HP Inc. Think with this belief that the AI revolution can also help kind of this technology upgrade cycle. Rovian Sciences, that was a small long position, and a small position in Class A shares of Liberty Global as well, and a medium-sized macro position to benefit from higher copper prices, which is another kind of interesting macro play. Additionally, in terms of portfolio management, they decided to sell immediately after that New York Community Bancorp result was announced at the end of January. I believe you guys also talked about that.
We did. He told, in your interview. He told me about that as well as gold. But as you're highlighting, these are a lot of new and interesting positions. Just back to, this just underscores the point that he was trying to make all along about value investing and what he does here at the top of the letter again. Not that value investing is dead, because he suggested it's a great time to be a value investor because there just aren't that many of them anymore, because the value investing industry, not value investing, the industry is dead as a result of passive investing, the proliferation of passive ETFs and the like. But he obviously believes that it's a good time to be a value investor, or he would be adding to a number. He wouldn't have any individual names because he wouldn't be able to find any.
It's also interesting. I mean, 3.1% contributor for the from those SOFR futures bets, the macro bets. Overall, the fund returned 4.9%. So that was a very significant contributor for them in the first quarter. And I kind of analogize that to what we saw with Pershing Square as well, where these fund managers who have kind of grown up in the equities business with relatively concentrated portfolios, maybe some, you know, with the two of them at least, a value investing bend, doing really well in macro investing with some sizable trades, betting on kind of contrarian at the time thoughts that ultimately pay off.
Yeah, he's been on a good run. Leslie, I appreciate it. That's Leslie Picker. Still ahead, some fresh committee moves to tell you about. First, though, senior markets commentator Mike Santoli with his midday word. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, is at Post 9 for his midday word. And in the words of the famed and I think late boxing referee, Mills Lane, let's get it on, okay?
Yeah.
Because tonight, you got a Meta to start it all up.
And hesitating ahead of that makes some sense. We added 100 plus S&P points in 2 days, so you give a few of those back along the way. Also, I think Meta itself is showing you that it's, you know, not necessarily sure of whether to believe the longer term trend or the fact that it's now trapped under its own 50-day moving average and have expectations gotten too high. So I understand the back and forth. 50-50 on the S&P is a really getting worn out, that spot on the field. We first hit it in the first couple of weeks of February. It was kind of where you launched in later February. It served as some support along the way. I know it was some people's target for the October rally to get to and end. So I find it kind of interesting that we're sort of waiting here and seeing if there's a decisive move. Obviously, we were oversold enough to bounce as we did. Mm-hmm. I don't think you got the kind of washout that says it's going to be one of these self-sustaining V bottoms that we just go back to the highs. And, you know, it's pretty healthy to just kind of kick around here.
Sure. Maybe that test, though, comes, I mean, you know, over the next 48 hours.
Could
right?
happen
I mean,
pretty fast.
It's not out of the realm of possibilities that you're reminded why we got here in the first place over the next 48.
No, exactly. And, you know, that has happened in past quarters where it's just like the most profitable companies in the history of the world tell you how they're doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can dictate the narrative. Is it the healthiest thing that NVIDIA has an average daily move of like 2.5% in the last couple of weeks? You know, it's a $40 billion swing in market value every day for no reason. Probably not, but that's what we have. Third biggest stock in the world.
All right. I'll see you on closing bell. I'll take it to the final final bell today. All right, we're tracking the trades next. We do have one member of the investment committee. It's Kevin Simpson. He's got several more moves, and he's going to join us next to tell you exactly what they are. It's not just Meta today. We do have other companies reporting, Joe, and many of them are in the Joe T. United Rentals today after the bell. ServiceNow today after the bell. Lam Research today after the bell.
United Rentals, we want to know that federal and private projects are still there. The growth of them over the last year has significantly benefited URI. Also, the equipment rental rates, they've got pricing power there. You want to see them remaining high. Case of ServiceNow, options implying a 5% move. Where are we on corporate IT spending? I think ServiceNow is going to be able to overcome any deceleration there. Mm-hmm. What's important to understand is what's the margin effect on the spend that they currently have as it relates to generative AI? And then Lam Research, look, we heard from KLA Corp already. Each of these stocks, semi-equipment names, they've pulled back a little bit in the last few days. Not very much in KLL's earnings report to indicate that you're going to get a lift. Let's hope we get some better news from Lam Research that the significant sales decline of 2023 is beginning to reverse itself and the memory chip market's coming back.
It's still up 13.5% year-to-date.
Best in breed, semi-equipment. Best
All right. We will step away. We'll come back with finals next. All right, let's talk about some more stocks that are in the news, important today. Chipotle, that reports too, that's yours.
That's a company that just does not disappoint. They have pricing power, they raise prices, people keep paying for them. They've won the hearts, the minds, and the bellies of Gen Z.
And yours.
And mine.
Visa, they had earnings, right, Bryn?
Yep. Yeah, we had a beat on revenues and earnings. We all know that the toll road of the financial ecosystem. What I like about the stock going into the summer is 57% of their revenues are international, and people are going to do lots of swiping at the Paris Olympics. On top of that, Visa and MasterCard were recent adds to the XLF, and it's almost an 8% holding. So as people go back into financials from a flow of funds, Visa will be a beneficiary.
All right. Let me remind you, too, that Brian Niccol, back to Chipotle, the CEO, is going to be in overtime tonight for a live interview. You don't want to miss that. Before that, closing bell, of course, I'll see you at 3 o'clock Eastern with Adam Parker, Anastasia Amoroso. Doug Clinton is with us, also Goldman's Elizabeth Burton. So I hope you'll join me as we take you through this final stretch. Bryn, why don't you give me a final trade?
Uranium. We have a structural supply shortage here. The stock has been basing, or the ETF has been basing, in the 50s. I think it's a good entry point over the mid and long term.
Okay. Steve Weiss?
Meta, in for a penny, in for a pound. I think that they're going to beat the quarter and show themselves well.
Going to be exciting. Joe T.
Goldman Sachs made that new all-time high that I was expecting. I still think there's plenty more upside ahead.
All right. So we're still in the red across the board, but we're going to have a really interesting finish as we take you right up to that Meta release, tell you exactly what to watch for. You hear from shareholders as well. I'll see you at 3 o'clock. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.